Haters are going to hate and the congregation's still going to gather. I'm glad to have you all back here for the 235th time. Stolman of the Parish of the Patriots. We just keep on going, and I'm really glad you're here this week. If you're a new listener, we do have a Christian-specific segment. I shoot for that being about the halfway point of the show. Usually it's not. It's usually very roughly the halfway point. I invite you to stick around for that, but that's up to you. I think it's the best part. It's kind of the whole point of the show, in my opinion. But whatever's brought you here, I'm glad you're here. Glad you can join us this week. Looking forward to a fun, lively discussion on all of our topics. I had to get out of the way. This is a free show, obviously. There's nothing behind a paywall. I don't have any kind of, there's not better content somewhere else. What I do is pass the offering plate around and ask, don't be shy, pay your tithes, throw a little something in the plate if you get something out of the show. And I realize you probably listen to multiple shows and every one of them is dunning you for a donation. And it's easy for that to become like, you just start shutting it out, you know, and it's like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Everybody wants me to give them some money. But I do ask that if you get something out of the show, you know, I'm not asking for your life savings here. Drop a little something in the plate. Every little bit makes a difference. It's a blessing for me, and I do appreciate it. So, and if you want to do that, that's just go here to the description page for the show on Radio Albin. You see, I got snail mail, Bitcoin, Monero, an email address there. Drop your notes, or if you've got a different cryptocurrency, drop me an email, because I can more than likely get you an address for that, and I have no pride. I will take your shit coins. I will do that. Let's go to the listener supporter mailbag. GPD, this from Mr. T, one of our weekly supporters. GPD, if I was half as wise as you, I would be twice as wise as I am now. Well, thank you very much, but you know, I'm just a regular dude. You know, I don't want to ever come off like I'm just like fake humility or something, but I really am a regular guy. God makes sure I stay humble. He makes sure that I don't ever start thinking more of myself than I ought to. And I appreciate your kind words. But trust me, God makes sure that I don't get a high and mighty idea. I'm just a regular guy. I'm just like all the rest of you. We just share what we look at in the world together. And when it comes to Christian specific segment, we work through the things I'm working through. We just share this and try to, I don't know, try to lift each other up. Grandpa Dan, on a recent episode of The Parish, you wondered if anyone gets anything out of your messages. I can tell you that I do. When you said that the purpose of life is to see if we can become spiritual beings, or words to that effect, it was like a light came on, illuminating the road before and behind me. And when you said that the Lord's sacrifice on the cross made it possible for us to start struggling with sin rather than to be done struggling with sin, I felt as if a weight had been lifted from my shoulders. Please do not doubt the results or reach of your message, Grandpa Dan. Anyway, may God bless you. And that's from Tom. And Tom, I got to tell you, that your testimony, as it were, I'd say, that was a blessing for me. I really mean it. It was just, again, the Lord makes sure I stay humble. And I thank you. I thank you for sharing that. And you know, that's the whole point. You know, that's why I do this. That's the whole point of why we do this show. And when I say we, I mean you and I, you listeners that choose to tune in. If I went and checked, you know, because, you know, it's fallen to me now in the absence of my friends, Finn Longshanks, you know, to post this stuff up to the side, and I can look and see how many people view the shows. And like, if I looked and my show was zero because it's so bad, nobody even listens, I would just stop. You know, there would be no point. So, no, it really does. I really thank you for that. It means a lot. We're 4 minutes in. And see, we've already gone through the asking you to drop something in the plate. We've gone through the listener supporter mailbag. So see, we don't spend too much time on it, but I do appreciate it. And I got to say, there's those of you, I know there's those that don't always drop notes. I've got people that, you know, they drop something in the plate once a year, you know, and there's some that drop something in the plate once a month and they don't always put a note on that. Look, I don't forget y'all. You know, it's not like I've done forgot, you know, you did your yearly or monthly and I done forget. I don't. You just part of how God blesses me in my view. And I do appreciate it. I pray for all y'all. I do. Anyway, I'm going to get mushy here. I'm going to get mushy. We got to keep on going.
Well, we had this thing. What was it? Last week or so?
You know, this guy, you know, goes in to a dollar store and shoots. I think he shot three people. The store amazingly only had legs for one day. That's where we're at. One day. The story, you know, the story didn't stick around long enough for people to start finding things that were sketchy about it. But I was thinking about these things, because you will have some of these stories will pop up and people will find, you know, they'll say, well, you know, the FBI groomed this guy to do it. And I was thinking about, you know, how that would play out if such is the case, you know. And of course, with this particular incident, I think one of the reasons the story lost legs so quickly was because they had to admit, or they admitted that, like, back in 2017, the guy was involuntarily committed to a mental institution. It's a pretty dead giveaway what might have been the problem here. Might not have been so much the white supremacy, whatever that may be, as the guy was just a nutcase. Sadly, we're going to see more of that because people are losing their damn minds. Done whole shows on how people are losing their damn minds. Also, to his credit, the black sheriff basically told the media that kept peppering him with gun control questions. And he basically was like, look, it's the people, okay? He said something like, I can set my gun up here and nothing's going to happen unless someone picks it up and does something with it, which is, of course, common sense, which is like, I don't know, kryptonite for journalists. Common sense. But I was thinking about this idea, because whenever you have this, a lot of times, sometimes more often than others, you know, you get into this. Does the FBI groom these shooters? And people get into whole things of this person was probably kidnapped and MK Ultra'd and this and that or the other. And some of these ideas, you know, they get pretty complicated. They get pretty extravagant. And I like to keep things simple because I think simple answers are a lot of times more likely than not. Now, obviously, I don't know. And I'm not sitting here making the blatant, you know, proclamation that the FBI has groomed this guy or any of these other shooters. Because obviously I don't know that for a fact. We're just theorizing hypothetically how would that work? Because I do personally think they do in some instances. And I think the idea of how that would look like, how that transpires, is a lot more obvious than what people make it out to be. Because, you know, you'll have people and they'll, like I say, you get into, they probably kidnapped this guy and brainwashed him over 6 months and then released him back. And I don't think it's that complicated, because we do have their open and admitted pattern of the way they work. And if you tweak that a little bit, you could see how it would work for one of these incidents. And what I mean by that is, if you look at their pattern for foiling Islamic terrorist plots, they'll go in, they'll send one of their people in, and they'll go around the mosque, try to talk jihad all the time, try to look for some retard to glom onto. So, and I say that not like being just insulted. I mean, like, somebody may be literally retarded, incapable of really mentally functioning correctly. And they would take these people, and this is, you know, I mean, this is by their own documentation, by news reports of how these sting operations work. They'll get this guy, and you know the story. They'll get one of these Muslims, and, you know, they'll find some retard that'll go along. They'll provide the money. They'll provide the bomb plot. They'll provide the fake bomb. They'll provide the car. They'll drive the guy, they'll drive this retard, you know, to the site to be bombed. They'll let the guy out with his fake bomb and then arrest him when he's getting ready to plant the fake bomb that they provided, the plot they provided, the idea they provided, and all of the rest of it. Then they arrest him and make a grand proclamation, we foiled another Islamic terrorist. We know that. I mean, this is documented, that they pretty much use this mode of operandi on a fairly regular basis. Now, see, with this in mind, how would one of these shooting events, if they were involved in it,
how would that play out? You see, it doesn't have to be a big complicated. You take the known mode of operating, the known way they've operated on these Islamic things, and just tweak it a little bit. In other words, they get on Discord, they get on the internet, whatever, and they find a retard who is not mentally stable, perhaps has already been committed to a mental institution. They can look up these backgrounds relatively easy. They find some retard and they start grooming him. You got to start killing a group of rando people that have nothing to do with anything, but you're going to convince this guy, this retard, what you need to do. You see, you just follow the same pattern, only instead of a fake bomb, as with the Islamic terrorists, they provide real guns, or the money for real guns. With the Uvalde shooter, this guy had like no job, or no, I think he had a job like at Taco Bell or some crap, and he had like thousands of dollars worth of weapons and ammunition, and nobody ever explained how he got that. But if you look at this Islamic terrorist pattern of operation and apply it here, well, it's not real hard to figure out. They provide the money, the guns, the vehicle, you know, everything, like with the Islamic method, only instead of at the end and arresting the guy before he plants the fake bomb, here the guy is given real money, real guns, real ammunition, and they just don't arrest him. They turn him loose. Let it go. Now, again, I got to emphasize, this is all theorized. I don't have facts to base this. I'm not. But we have to theorize, because they just lie to us all the time. So we have to theorize. And in our theorizing, there's no need to make this overcomplicated. We have their admitted way of operating with that they've used with the Muslims. It's not hard to see how they just apply the same thing to white supremacist domestic terrorism. And just see where all they'd have to do is tweak the operation a little bit, and voila. You know, you've got your operation with, you know, plausible deniability. Besides, who's going to investigate it? You know, who's going to investigate it and turn it over? I mean, certainly not the journalists. Of course, it goes without saying, if three black people got shot in a weekend in Chicago, it'd be celebrated as an achievement of law enforcement. Only three of them got killed. Story like this makes national headlines, even if for only one day. It makes national headline because the shooter is a white man, and this can be used for the narrative. Now, an important aspect of this I gotta point out is, and the reason, you know, you might say, why even need to talk about this? Whether you talk about the Islamic terrorist pattern, and if it is applied to the white supremacist domestic terrorist shooter program. And again, I think that's the simplest answer. All they have to do is use their admitted, very well-known operating tactic and just apply here with a few tweaks. Like I said, instead of a fake bomb, the guy has real guns. Instead of being arrested at the last minute and the plot foiled, they just let him go ahead and do their thing. The takeaway here is, the person involved, the person they pick out, is always some retard. And again, by that, I mean somebody who's socially maladjusted, probably has mental problems. Your goal should always be, don't be the retard. And that's going to require some self-awareness. Because you might not, you know, I probably shouldn't even use that term. Look, if you know, like, you know you're autistic. You know, let's say you know you're autistic, and you know you have a hard time dealing with people, and especially in a social setting, and you're socially awkward, and you've got a real, you say you're kind of antisocial. You have to be self-aware. You have to accept yourself for who you are. This is important. You got to understand yourself and who you are and say, look, you know, I know I've got problems. You know, maybe you've got some mental problems. You just be honest with yourself. Don't be in denial. That doesn't help anybody, certainly not you. Because your goal here is, you don't ever want to be the retard they pick out. Okay? You want to run away from that. You know, maybe you have problems socializing, and all of a sudden this guy shows up and he's your bestest friend.
You met him on the Discord channel, and y'all were talking about how much you hate people, and you know, when and this, and you just want to burn society or whatever. And this guy shows up out of the blue, and you know what? He thinks just like you do, and he affirms everything you think about the world, and he's your bestest buddy. And you know what? By golly, you know, we don't even live that far apart. Why, we could get together and hang out and don't be the retard. Don't be the reason they're going to reel your ass in. You're going to get yourself into a situation. Don't be that guy. I'm telling you, they don't have your best interest in mind. Always remember, it's the internet. You don't know who the hell you're dealing with. You know? If you on some sketchy site and, you know, somebody's like, you know, oh yeah, I'm a hot blonde girl and I want to talk sexy to you. That could very well be some middle-aged fat dude that's sitting there in his tidy whities, winking while he's talking sexy to you. It's the internet. You don't know who the hell you're talking to on the other end. Y'all don't ever lose sight of that. People present themselves as whatever they want to be. If you know they operate in this pattern, your number one goal should don't be that retard. Don't be that guy. Tell you, man, it's a crazy world. Everything is fake and gay. I talking about fake and gay stuff in this world. God. Yahoo News. It's fake and gay right off the bat. Yahoo News. You know, they cut comments off for a long time and they brought comments back. Why? It's so obvious. Because it's not because like they cut comments off because, you know, then they figured out they had some sort of new love for free speech or something. So they brought comments back. Trust me, that's not what they did. I see stories. And I've gotten so good at this now. Because, see, I found so much. I don't have any social media. Y'all been with me for a long time. You know, I don't have any social media. If you find somebody on Facebook or Twitter X or whatever the hell it's called now, whatever, anywhere, and they're claiming to be me, I can tell you right now, they're a liar. I don't have any social media. You ain't going to find me on no damn social media. Don't bother looking. My life is better for it. I would recommend it for all of you, but that's your choice. But anyway, I look at these stories. I read these stories, and I know what the comments are going to be before I read them. It's an amazing thing because the reason they cut comments off and then bring them back is they had to get it set up. They had to get the program running. It's a program. There's a reason they discontinued. And you can apply this pattern to basically any news source. They cut comments off because they had to get a program set up. And then when they reenacted the comment, they have the program running and you can recognize it. I can read an article and before I click on the comments, this is kind of like a little game I have with myself. I read an article and I guess what the comments are going to be. Any article that pops up on Yahoo News about Trump, I know what the comments are going to be. And sure enough, you click on them and virtually every comment that pops up is Orange Man is so bad and a threat to our democracy, he should serve 3 lifetimes in prison. Anything that has to do with January 6th, virtually every comment is going to be these people hate our democracy, our freedoms of who we are, and they should all rot in prison and hell forever because they tried to overturn the government and attack the government and they murdered cops and committed another Holocaust on January 6th. Virtually every single comment. Now, what makes this a fun game is on the same front page, there'll be an article right next to it about another, say, political, but perhaps less benign topic. And you scroll down through it and hit the comments and say 90% of the comments are, yeah, you know, this government is utterly corrupt. These Democrats have just stole the election and they just, the media's in on it with them and they just want us all to go along. And there will be like 10% of them will be the NPC bot people that say, no, it's all totally legit. You see, that's a better snapshot. Now, why would 2 articles side by side, if the people in the Trump article, for instance, if that's legit, how come they didn't read the next article and feel a need to comment on it? No, because it's all fake. These people are either bots, AI,
or they're just paid chills. And they, their job is to have it all set up. So as soon as that article publishes, they got all these comments ready to go talking, you know, it's to gaslight you. So that you look at that and you go, oh, man, everybody thinks the orange man's bad and everybody on January 6th should be executed for sedition and trying to overturn the democracy value of who we are. Even though you go to the very next article and they don't have those people, the bots, the AI all lined up for that. And you got like 90% of the people that says, you know, the Democrats are just stealing all the elections and doing whatever the hell they want to. And 10% of the people maybe disagree with that. It doesn't add up because it's fake. Yeah, I guarantee I look at an article. I've done this long enough. I can look at an article before I ever click on the comments. Most of the time, I'm correct of what the comments are going to be. And it's so funny because so many of them are cut and pasted. And it's not just political articles. I was reading this article. I don't remember. I don't think it was Yahoo News. It was on another platform. And it was an article about electric vehicles, EVs, electric vehicles, which is another hoax they're pushing over on people. They're trying to force people into these things. Nobody actually wants them. You know, electric vehicles are like the masks. They're the automotive version of wearing the mask. People that buy them, by and large, vast majority of them do it for virtue signaling. So look what a good person I'm saying. I have an EV. I have a Tesla. I have an EV. I bought an electric pickup. They're forcing these things. They're trying to force this meme on the public with these electric vehicles. And nobody wants them. Nobody, A, nobody can afford them. B, anybody that does like a modicum of research on the actual range, not the advertised range, the actual range. And by the way, isn't it funny that they can sell these things and claim they have a range of like 300-400 miles when they don't have a range of 300-400 and nobody is suing them for that? Like the government isn't cracking down on them for false advertising. You know, they made the car companies on these gas vehicles keep tweaking their miles, you know, advertised mile per gallon to make it more in real or more in line with real world conditions. And they don't do that on the EVs. They let them go out and claim, you know, 400 miles of range when the damn thing won't get to, not on a hot day or a cold day. Or if you're running the air conditioner or the heater, you can forget all that. It's out the window. Because this is a forced meme from the government. And people, you know, now they've gone through the virtue signalers that want to wear the mask, drive around with a mask on in their Tesla. You want a virtue signal because I have an EV. They've run through those people. And now they can't get rid of these damn things. They're stacking up. Because now they've run through the virtue signalers, and until that battery goes bad and the people that bought these things find out that it costs more for a replacement battery than the car is worth, they're going to sell another one to anybody. So these things are stacking up. They're forcing this meme. Anyway, I was reading an article on electric vehicles, and as usual, it was a puff piece about how great they are or whatever. And you read through the comments. I was reading through the comments. And, you know, a lot of people are skeptical, say the least. I don't even think it's skeptical. I think it's realistic about what these things really are. But you have all these comments peppered in there countering them. And allegedly by different people, and obviously it's AI. It's got to be AI or it's got to be bots because it's literally the same comment over and over and over again. Oh, EVs are baked into the cake. That term is just what really stuck with me over and over. And you're going through in the same comments, something along the line, a little very different variation of it. Obviously, they programmed the AI to tell people it's baked into the cake. It's inevitable. EVs are baked into the cake. You might as well get used to it. EVs are baked into the cake. We're going to get the infrastructure. Don't worry. EVs are baked into the cake. It's baked into the cake. It's baked into the cake. You can just give up on your gas vehicles because it's baked into the cake. You're getting an EV whether you like it or not. It's fake. Very fake, gay. Most places they're allowing comments, any kind of articles they're allowing comments are, it's for the purpose, not for you to speak your opinion. Your opinion is going to get buried at the bottom, or it's just not going to be allowed at all. It's just going to get, they'll tell you, you know, because you're not in on the program. I've seen people, I've heard of people saying that, you know, that they try to post comments on some of these news sites that allow comments. And no matter what it posts, the thing kicks them out and they don't understand. You'll see them bitching on forums or whatever. And they'll be like, well, I tried to post a comment on Yahoo News. And I mean, I just posted a regular comment and it kept saying it wouldn't let me post. It said that, you know, I was violating their community standards. what the hell? What do I got to do? No, you don't understand. You're not part of the program. They're trying to get all the comments fed by the AI and the bots first. Then maybe you can make your little comment and it can go at the bottom. See, most of these places are allowing comments, these news sites or whatever. They allow comments, you know, so that they can gaslight you. That's the purpose, to gaslight you. It's not because they care about your opinion. Now, obviously, such is not the case for alternative media, because, you see, people who are seeking the truth aren't afraid to hear other people's opinions, because there's either going to be some truth to it or there's going to be full of it. And you just, you know, you can blow up people being full of it without any problem. A telltale of liars is that, you know, they're the ones that have to have sense. If you want to know who's lying, like if you're, I don't know, a babe in the woods wandering around in this world with no clue of what's going on for some reason, and you look and you can't figure out, I wonder who's telling the truth to me. The side that demands that the other side not be allowed to speak, that's the side that's lying. Somebody who's speaking the truth, they don't care. You know, people who are speaking the truth, that's why you go to alternative media and they're going to have more open comments, because they don't care. Some idiot shows up and starts spouting nonsense, he's going to get just slammed with facts and made to look like an idiot and a fool. Because the facts speak for themselves. The side that demands the other side has to shut up and not be allowed to speak, you can be rest assured. You can take it to the bank. That's your liar. There's the deceiver. The deceiver has to make sure that you don't hear the facts. You got to listen to them and their emotional arguments, their pleas, or their emotional pleas for, I don't know, vague ideologies or whatever the hell. Their over-the-top hysterical claims that if we don't make these people shut up, it could cause another Holocaust. People are going to go out in the streets. It's going to cause violence. They don't want you hearing the facts. That's it. It's amazing. Because I'm older and I remember when people were sane, or more sane than they are now. And this argument, this thing, this narrative they've placed out here, that people speaking the truth, people disagreeing with the liberal narrative equates violence. Because, you know, you see, you're not supposed to look and say who's telling the truth and who's lying. You see, if these people are allowed to tell the truth, if these people are allowed to speak their opinions, that is going to equate to some guy's going to get a bunch of guns and do a mass shooting, because those people are allowed to speak. They're allowed to disagree with the left. It's absurd, of course. But you see, it's because their arguments never hold water. You know, once you cut through the emotionalism, once you cut through their emotional pleas and their emotionalistic pleas and gibberish, they don't hold water under just a little bit of scrutiny. Their arguments always come down to, don't believe your lying eyes. Just listen to my emotional bleeding. Who are you going to trust, your lying eyes? Who are you going to trust, these guys over here that are saying, look at the world around you? Is what he's saying make any sense? No, that's stupid. That's gibberish. We know how the world works. No, that person's got to be shut down. Don't allow them to speak. That way you have no choice but to listen to the ridiculous lies and the emotional appeals that are. And you can be guaranteed that someone that's doing that does not have your best interest in mind. Nobody has to trick you to do something that's in your best interest. Censorship is always, and we need to get in the Christian specific segment, but really, it's always insulting. These people's view is always insulting. Because like they're saying that you are so stupid, that you are so, I don't know, incapable, that if you are allowed to hear somebody's opinion, then you're just going to lose it and go out and kill people or something. It's very insulting, isn't it? You shouldn't be allowed to hear this because you just can't handle it. Listen to our emotional appeals. Listen to our emotional appeals. Because it never, I mean, you look at all of these hoaxes they do, and none of it holds water. None of them. The global warming, climate change, next ice age, whichever it is at the time, hoax is so stupid. I mean, you don't have to be a scientist. You look at this and it's observably stupid on its face. It doesn't hold water. you go back and use your own words against them. By 2012, New York's going to be underwater. Boy, was I disappointed in 2013. Bought all that champagne for no reason. Whatever current war the empire's involved in now, it's a matter of life and death for your freedoms that are evaporating every day. Their positions they won't hold up to any scrutiny. So the only choice they have is to shut down and not allow any sort of scrutiny. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. We're going to keep on rolling. Like I say, if you're new, I hope you'll stick around for it, but that's up to you. You've been warned. Don't whine to me. I didn't want to listen to Christian stuff. I warned you. So yeah, if you're going to listen, you're going to listen. If you're not, you're not. Either way, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. Well, I know I've said this before. One of the things I think I have come to recognize as a read through the Bible, and as always, I encourage all of y'all to try to make time, if at all possible, every day. I know it's hard. I know y'all got work and you've got things going on. Do your best if you at all can. If it's not every day, twice a week or something, try to find some time alone. You can't do it while you've got people in the house making noise and the TV going in the background. If you've got those things going on, don't bother, because you're wasting your time and you're going to get frustrated. But if you at all can, try to have some quiet time whenever you can. Ideally every day, but if that's not possible, if it's once a week, whatever you got to do. But if at all possible, you want some quiet time to seek the Lord, to read your Bibles. I know we haven't been hammering specific Bible verses here lately. I'm really enjoying just kind of this more general discussion format, but I always want to emphasize the importance of reading your Bibles. I'm currently read a book from the Old Testament alongside a book of the New Testament, and I think that works pretty good for me. It might work for you. You might try it. Don't get hung up on, you know, trying to understand every single line you read. If there's something that you don't understand, just keep on going. Don't get discouraged. It is important. And as you do read through your Bibles and as you grow in this, you really start, I believe God starts revealing, or you start understanding, you know, the patterns. And we've talked about patterns a lot here. And because I think a lot of the Bible, you start recognizing patterns. Now, we know the MCC, they pretty much don't do anything besides entertain people and tell them how much Jesus loves them. And you know, yes, Jesus loves you, obviously. You know, the Lord loves you. But they're not educating people. You know, it's written in the New Testament. It says, if you tell somebody who's hungry and has nothing to eat, oh, go and hunger no more, and you don't give them any food, when it's within your ability to give them something to eat, then what is your faith brought? You haven't actually done anything. Likewise, the MCC will sit here and tell people, Jesus loves you, over and over for an hour every week on Sunday, but they don't give them any food to eat. They don't give them anything that lifts them up, that sustains them, that they can work on and say, hey, this is going to make my life better. This is going to make my spiritual walk more productive. This is going to help me to understand the world around me. They're just telling them over and over again how much Jesus loves them. And again, yes, Jesus loves you. I'm not saying he doesn't, but it's important to survive in this world, to understand the world around us. Because the world's gone crazy. I did a whole show recently on how people are losing their minds. And I see it. I hear about it. You see it on the news. People are going crazy. You understand these patterns. And you understand the patterns that the Lord operates in. But another important element is you understand the patterns that our enemy operates in. That Satan operates in, and then you start understanding more and more how this works. Satan also operates in a pattern. This important. Jesus said, if Satan is divided against himself, a house divided against itself can't stand. You know, if Satan casts out demons, then his house is divided.
and his house can't stand because they were accusing him of casting out demons with the power of demons. And he was pointing out how ridiculous that is because Satan works in patterns. There's certain guidelines that Satan also works within. There's a framework of these things, of how this conflict works. There's a framework of what Satan does. Jesus told the Pharisees, he said, you are the children of the devil and you do the work of your father, the devil. He's a liar and a murderer from the beginning. Now, if as children of the devil, they're doing the work of their father, the devil, that means they can't get outside of that box. And if, well, technically they can because they do have free will, but if they get outside of that box, they're getting outside of the work of their father, the devil. And again, the house of Satan can't be divided. So when you understand the patterns that Satan works under, it helps you understand this world. Because we know Satan has dominion in this world right now. He's basically running loose in the world right now. So it's important also to understand the patterns and the framework that Satan works within. Because when you understand these patterns, it'll help you make sense. A lot of the reason people are losing their minds is because they just don't understand. You have all these social pressures. They don't understand the world that's, you know, the world around them. All of this has been put on society, but before this, they removed God from society and replaced God with idols. So when you understand the pattern, set, for just as an example of how this works, I get into some of these conspiracy things, you know, some of the different theories, and I don't use term conspiracy theory derogatory like the media does, because we all have to do conspiracy theories because they lie to us all the time and they conspire against us all the time. So we have to theorize what these obvious conspirators are up to and where they're going with certain things. So yes, everybody, if you're seeking the truth, everybody has to be a conspiracy theorist because they are open. They're obviously conspiring against us and they lie to us all the time. So we have to pick up what little tidbits of information we can and theorize where the hell they're going with what they're doing. So we're all conspiracy theorists. And you hear different things. And when you understand the patterns that Satan works in, and you understand that at the end of the day, they're doing the work of their father, the devil, then you can kind of sort through some of this. Like I say, I saw or heard, I don't remember, somebody was talking about, you know, they're going to release, you know, they have this idea of, you know, controlling you with nanobots, you know, and they're going to put these, they want you to take these nanobots and they're going to control you and hook you up to a giant neural net. I'm skeptical of all this because I don't agree with this idea that the human mind, the human brain is nothing more than an organic computer. I think that's silly, but just rolling with that. And then I saw where somebody says, yes, they're going to take these nanobots and they're going to release them in the air. And they're going to like basically crop dust you or something. You release them in the air. You're going to unknowingly breathe these nanobots in. And the nanobots will go to work inside of you and take control of you. And you're just going to be hooked up to it. Now, when you understand the patterns that Satan works in, you know that's bullshit. And that's not going to happen. And let me tell you why. With Satan, it has always got to be your choice. Okay? Let me say it again. It has to be your choice. Now, he can make that choice, and he will. He can and will make that choice as difficult as absolutely possible. He will put as much pressure on you as absolutely possible. And while applying that pressure, he will probably present you all sorts of justifications to make the wrong choice, to justify that and tell you how you're totally justified in doing that. But at the end of the day, he's not going to take that choice away from you. And he's not going to make the choice for you. Let's say, you know, I'm not taking the vaccine. You know, you talk about the mRNA vaccines. I'm not taking that. I think there's something inherent. You know, we're made in the image of God. And a part of that image is our DNA. So in that essence, this creation, you created in the image of God, your DNA is a part of that. And allowing them to go in and start rewriting and tinkering around with that, I think, is an affront to the fact that you were made in the image of God. Not to mention, I don't think it's very wise to be experimented on. Now, they have in the past, and they're going to roll this back around, and they put all this pressure on you. If you want to keep your job, you got to get the shot. If you want to go to a concert, you got to get the shot. If you're going to go here, if you're going to go there, if you do this, if you do that, we've read stories where people were denied necessary medical treatment. Like, this person's going to die if they don't get a kidney transplant, and they've got a donor, everything's lined up. Oh, you haven't had the COVID vaccine. You have to have that, or we're not going to let you have the transplant. You notice the common theme here, though. It's always your choice. If they came in, this is how I know, by the way, that it's satanic. If they came in and held you down in a headlock and gave you the shot while you're struggling against your will, you're not guilty. You see, Satan always has got to be able to accuse you. He's always got to be able, you always got to think of it in terms of the accusation. He wants you to choose destruction. That's part of the pattern he operates in. And we're not really, I'm not going to really get off into why that is necessarily, but that is the important thing for today's discussion is to understand that's the framework that he operates in. He's not going to force you. Now, again, he can make it as difficult a choice, and he will, you know, even unto death. You know, renounce your faith and do as you're told, or we will kill you. But it's, you notice here, it's still your choice. You can't say, oh, I had no choice. If I didn't do it, they were going to kill me. No, you still had a choice. You know, the apostles, so many of them ultimately, and the saints ultimately chose death, but it was still their choice. Even unto death, they chose to stay with the truth, to stay with the Lord. There's a huge difference in these two things. So when you hear somebody theorize that they're going to do this, that, and the other, you're not even going to know they're doing it, and it's going to force you into this without you even knowing it's happening. No, it won't, because that's not the way Satan operates. And yes, people have free will. And his children. But if his children get outside of that framework, they're going to get booted. They're going to fall out of favor with their father, the devil. And you have to understand, their father is not compassionate, gracious, merciful, and loving like our father. You know, God loves you as his children. God loves you as compassion. He's nurturing you and raising you up, just as any parent would nurture and raise up their children. Satan sees his as useful tools. He doesn't care. When they cease to be useful, he discards them and moves and destroys them and moves on to the next. He doesn't have compassion. He doesn't care. If his children get outside of the framework that he wants to operate in and that he operates in, then they're discarded and somebody else is put in that position. Now, again, don't get me wrong. People will just do things to you against your will. Obviously, that's going to happen. But in the framework of Satan, you know, that's just people doing awful things. Another good example of this is sodomy. There's a huge difference between if you choose that. There's a huge difference, and I'm not trying to be crude and vulgar here. I'm trying to make a point. There's a huge difference if you stick your ass up in the air and, you know, beg somebody to go ahead and sodomize you, then if a group of men beat the crap out of you till you can't move, and then, you know, while they're holding you down, sodomize you. See, in the first, Satan can accuse you. You stand accused because you made that choice. In the second instance, you were just victimized. Satan can't say anything about you because you were just victimized. That was just done to you by evil people, by wicked people. You don't stand accused of anything. And I want to make a point here. If that has happened to you, perhaps as a child, you know, or whatever the circumstance, I'm not going to know what your circumstance. If something like that happened to you, let that go. You don't stand accused. Satan might try to convince you that you're a filthy, wicked, you know, thing because this happened to you. Look, if something was just done to you against your will, you didn't have a choice in the matter. Let that go. You don't stand accused of anything. That was just wicked people doing wicked things to you. don't let that burden your heart. You know, you're not condemned because somebody victimized you. You hear what I'm saying? Satan is always going to want you to have a choice. Sometimes it may seem like you don't have a choice, but you should look for it. Get the vaccine or you lose your job. And you can sit there and have the justification of, man, I've got to have my job. But if you honestly believe that, you know, and I think it's pretty hard to deny that tinkering around and rewriting parts of your DNA is messing with the creation of God, then you do have a choice. I've got to have this job. Well, no, you don't. I mean, it means you might give up some of your things and you might feel financial loss and you might have all these problems. I'm not saying it's an easy choice. Satan is never going to make it an easy choice. But it is still a choice, and you have to recognize that choice. And that's the framework he works within. So when somebody comes up with some theory and they say they're going to force you to do things, you're not even going to know they're doing it to you. No, they're not. By and large, I mean, again, wicked people might just do something to you. That's just you being victimized. You don't stand accused before the Lord. You're not going to have anything to answer for before the Lord because wicked people did something to you. Again, if you're a child and some homosexual molested you or sodomized you or whatever, there's not going to be any accusation against you before the Lord. That was just done to you by wicked people. That was just wicked people using their free will to do wicked things and to do evil things. Things that Satan's involved in are going to be in that framework of you have a choice, because that way you stand accused. That way you have to. And it's not even necessarily like Satan standing there pointing his finger at you in a courtroom. It's not that. It's you having to answer for it because you made the choice. You just put in that framework of, you know, you're going to have to get rid of that. You're going to be stripped of those justifications when you leave this life. And you've got to face that and answer for it, that you did have a choice and you chose the things of this world. I think that makes sense. I do think it's important to understand both the patterns that the Lord operates in, but as well the patterns that our enemy operates in. Now, we talk about idolatry a lot because, as I said earlier, they've removed God from society. They have essentially set up altars, and if you read the Old Testament, this is nothing new. They have replaced the altar of the Lord, just as in the Old Testament. They removed the Lord from society and have replaced it with these other idols. And they're numerous. As the top three for, you know, is materialism, money, and everything that goes with that. But there are various idols that the people have been presented with, and they've all gone a-whoring after these idols. And idolatry is, of course, deadly spiritually, but it's also deadly in this world. And what I was going to talk about next, I was torn between just talking about it in the regular part of the show, people's behavior. But the more I thought about it, and like, really, to understand this, you have to put it in the context of idolatry, and that's not going to really fit in the first part of the show, so I want to put it in the Christian-specific segment. We know about the story about the wild, the fires devastating, you know, the town in Hawaii, in Maui. And, you know, setting aside, we're not going to talk about, you know, how was it started? Was this intentional? I don't want to get into that. I just want to get into what, you know, has been presented to us, because it gives us an interesting example to look at. You see the pictures, and again, I don't want to get into, well, was that fake or any of that. Let's just go with it because it's very telling. You see the pictures of all the cars lined up on the road, burned up, and supposedly all these people also burned up sitting in their cars trying to get out of town, but they couldn't get out. There's one main road out of town, and they couldn't get out. The fire overtook them. Now, I read an interesting thing the other day, and the reason these cars were stacked up is the government had set up a barricade on the end of the road for whatever the hell reason. They had set up a barricade on the end of this road. Now, I'm assuming by barricade, it was a sawhorse with some flashing lights on it or something, because I was reading and it said that there were a few people, just a few, that had loaded their families up in their car and were trying to get out of town. And they come up on this barricade and the road was blocked. There were a few people that said, well, piss on this. And they went around the barricade, and 20 minutes later, they were safe in the next town over and they were fine.
the rows of people in their cars that burned up sat there and burned up or turned around and went back because there was a sawhorse with flashing lights and maybe, I don't know, some cops standing there. And they were like, I can't go. My idol has told me I'm forbidden. Imagine this. You've got a fire roaring down on you. You put your family and your belongings and your dogs or whatever in the car with you. You're taking off and you get up here and there's a couple of cops and a sawhorse with some flashing lights. And you're thinking, okay, there's a fire raging behind me or I can sit here. I don't know about you. I'm going around the damn thing. They can chase me if they want to. I'm going around them and I'm headed to the next town over. And a few people did that, but only a few. Everybody else sat there and obeyed. Now, I've said, and I believe for a while now, that, you know, as we see society collapse around us, there's going to be a massive culling. And this is an example of what I'm talking about. These people, you know, sadly, and I'm not, you know, making light of it, these people were culled out because they chose to obey an idol. And this idol, in this case, would be authority, would be the government. When your own instincts say, I should drive around the sawhorse with the flashing yellow lights and go to the next town over, and you don't do that because I've got to follow the rules. When that's obedience to an idol, even unto death. You got a fire raging down and you were still not going to go around those flashing lights because, oh my gosh, you know, that would be that would be disobeying the rules. We've got to do what we're told. Even unto death. That's why as society collapses, I say a lot of people are going to be culled out. The NPC bot people that would just blindly do whatever they're told no matter what, and they'll blindly believe whatever the media and government tell them. As society breaks down and people more and more left on their own, the people that refuse to realize that. See, everybody lined up there in their cars with fire bearing down on them, they were on their own. And the ones that went around and 20 minutes later were safe and sound with their family and their dogs, you know, a part of them, they realized they were on their own. You're either going to survive or you're not. Everybody that stayed in line and didn't go around the barricades, you know, they were still waiting. They were still waiting to be told what to do. This serves as a real example of, as society breaks down, why people are going to get culled out, because they're going to be still sitting around. If a disaster comes to you, you know, and it can come in any form, a natural disaster, any number of things. You see these ridiculous people that say, oh, well, nobody needs to have a gun. You can just call the police. Well, those are always the people that wind up dead. Those are always the people that wind up horribly victimized because, you know, all the cops do if they show up at all. And in American cities, they show up less and less. Is they show up and write a report afterwards. That's it. They don't show up like on TV and rescue you at the last minute. You dial 911 and they come up blazing up and catch the bad guy before he can harm you. They show up afterwards, write a report and leave, and they don't and file it and forget about it. As society continues to break down, people are going to be on their own. And these NPC bot people that blindly wait for the government to take care of them, they're not going to realize, they're not going to be able to accept that they're on their own. And when they do accept that they're on their own, it will be too frightening. They are too conditioned to being babysat, to being coddled, to being taken care of. When it comes down to having to accept that that's not the case, they're just not going to be able to handle it. They're just going to refuse it altogether. I've said before, I think we're going to see a lot of these people just kill themselves because they can't deal with the idea of it. It's just too scary. And then some will just sit around and blindly do nothing and wait at the barricade. The government show up and rescue them and tell them what it is they should do next, even though their instinct should be screaming to them, go around the damn sawhorse and keep driving. What are you doing? You see, this is blind allegiance. And you can see why I kind of was in between whether to talk about this in the Christian specific segment or not. But the example, blind allegiance to idolatry leading to destruction in this life, I don't think you can leave that out, because what an idol. That you bow down to government authority to the point
that you're just not going to go around. You're just not. You just sit there and be burned up because I can't go around the sawhorse. I find that amazing. It's kind of like, you know, I'm one of those people like, you know, I understand why we have to have rules and you have to have certain things function. Where I live, the traffic is horrible. It's just awful. And you have all this multitude of traffic lights and you have to obey these traffic lights because that's the only way anyone gets anywhere. And you still have all these wrecks because the traffic's bad. But you have all these traffic lights and you got to stop when it's red and you got to go when it's green. And when the green arrow says you can turn left, you can turn left so you don't get T-boned. You got to have those things. At the same time, if you go through town at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you're sitting at a red light, there ain't a soul in the world around. And now the red light's hung and you're sitting there for 10 minutes. And I've seen people do this. They will sit there for like 10 minutes at a red light that's hung at 3 o'clock in the morning. There's no one around and they will not go because the light says red and I've got to obey. I'm blowing through the light. I'm probably going to maybe just slow up and just keep going because there's no one around. Now, I understand the importance of having traffic lights. Yes, I mean, you got to have this so that people aren't crashing into each other. But it's 3 o'clock in the morning. There's nobody around to crash into. Just go. They'll sit there and obey that light. They won't go around the sawhorse. It's scary. The authorities say the light says I can't go. I've got to sit here and blindly follow the light. God gave you common sense. And there's a whole bunch of traffic. Yeah, you got to go with traffic lights because that's what keeps everything flowing. But if it's 3 a.m. and no one's around, my gosh, use your brain. Go. Why are you sitting there? That's silly. You know, I was talking the importance of understanding. I really hate that the MCC, and I know I'm beating a dead horse here. I hate that the MCC has basically abandoned the old time. I saw a video. I was talking about videos that pop up in my feed. I saw a video the other day and some bimbo harlot, she tells this guy, she says, oh yeah, I'm Christian. He says, do you believe what's in the Bible? And she's like, no. This is, you can laugh at that, but this is essentially the MCC as a whole. This is so much of the modern church around you as a whole. I'm a Christian. Oh really? So you believe what's in the Bible? Well, no, not really. Then you're not. I always make fun. Recent Daily Nationalist, one of my favorite targets is the Church of England because they're so ridiculous calling themselves a Christian church. And they obviously don't believe in anything in the Bible. They worship the democracy and the democracy says we got to have more gay anal. But it is important. And that's why you've got to do this on your own. You know, I mean, if you've got a church that's you know, preaching from the Bible and real, I mean, congratulations. But those are few and far between, hard to find. You know, I think the Orthodox Church is probably honestly your best bet, but you may not have one of those in your town. In which case, look, you're on your own, which means you're going to have to get in your Bibles and pray. And hopefully you get something from this show. That's kind of the goal of this show so that, you know, you could, you know, maybe kind of help you along. I'm just sharing things that I work through myself and hoping that it's a blessing for all of you. So the modern church has discarded so much of the Bible, but especially the Old Testament. And the two match together. And the more you go through it, the more you see it. I was thinking the other day about in the Old Testament, you know, one of the most famous stories from the Old Testament is Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, and everybody's more or less familiar with the tale of Sodom and Gomorrah. But people are less familiar about what leads up to Sodom and Gomorrah. And you have the angel of the Lord. You have these spiritual entities in the form of men. And some say there's Jesus himself, and it could be. But you have, we'll say the angel of the Lord. You have angels of the Lord show up. And they basically tell Abraham, we're going to check out this city because God's probably going to destroy it. And Abraham starts negotiating. I found this interesting because Abraham starts negotiating. Now, this all takes place before they show up in the familiar story of how, you know, what goes down in the city and Lot and his family fleeing and his wife turning back, that everybody knows. But leading up to this, you have Abraham negotiating with God. what if there's 1,000 righteous men in the city? Will you still destroy the city? No, no, for the sake of 1,000 righteous men, I, even though all this wickedness going on, I won't destroy the city. And Abraham keeps going. He's haggling. He's haggling with Jesus. He's haggling with God. Okay, well, bear with me, Lord. What if there's 100 men left in the city? Will you still destroy the city then? No, no. For the sake of 100 men, I'll go ahead and spare the city for the sake of 100 men, even though all the rest of these are wicked. And he keeps going like this till he gets down to basically, what if there's one righteous man? Will you still destroy the city? Now you can go into the rest of what we know. The angels show up and they find Lot. That's it. Everybody else is fixing to get barbecued. But Abraham negotiating with God. That's an interesting thing. Why would he do that? And what does that tell us? You see, I think Abraham was trying to understand the way the Lord thinks. And that's what we do, right? We read our Bibles and we pray and we look at the world around us and we try to understand. Why? Because we're trying to understand how God thinks. We're trying to understand how God operates. Abraham is like, okay, God, but what if there's, you know, 50 righteous men? Would you still do it then? He's trying to understand, what's the point? At what point is that too much? And he's haggling down. He's trying to figure out how God is viewing these things. He's trying to understand God. Abraham was one man in the Bible that was referred to as a friend of God, the friend of God. He's trying to understand. And that's what we're doing, isn't it? This is kind of the whole point of what we're trying to do. We try to do in this life is we're trying to understand God. We're trying to understand how he thinks so that we can kind of get in line with what he's doing. And that's what Abraham, I believe, was doing. He's trying to understand. It's not like he's necessarily trying to save the city. He's just trying to understand God's reasoning. You know, at what point is, you know, how much value is placed on a righteous man? What's the cost? Are 100 righteous men hold enough value to God that he would spare this obviously wicked, wicked city? What about 50? Is that enough? How much value, in other words, Abraham was discovering, how much value does a righteous man hold in the eyes of the Lord? And he winds up haggled all the way down to, what if there's one? Now, this tells you what Abraham learned is that a righteous man holds much value in the eyes of the Lord. Now, bearing this in mind, if you think to the book of Ecclesiastes, the teacher in Ecclesiastes says, I search through, and I'm doing these off the top of my head. I know I'm not going to get the wording necessarily exactly right. Hopefully y'all are familiar and these things rhyme, you know, sound familiar to you. I don't want to get bogged down and sitting here and looking up and reading the exact, because I know I'm pretty much right on here. It's written in Ecclesiastes. The teacher says, I looked through 1,000 men and found but one righteous man. But I looked through 10,000 women and found not a single one. Now, let's look to the New Testament and look to our society today. One of the things I think is a hallmark of our Western collapsing society is how feminine in nature it has become. You know, do you think you could honestly look through 1,000 men today and find one righteous man, as it says in the book of Ecclesiastes? I don't think you could. Because among men in our society in general, I'm generally speaking, obviously, our society's become so feminine in nature. It has become, for lack of a better term, just make a term up, feminine centric. It has become very matriarchal. I'm still searching for terms, as you can tell here. But it's become very feminized, and men have become very feminized. So if you apply Ecclesiastes, do you think you could find one man out of 10,000 that was righteous? I think that's a stretch, honestly, but we'll go with that. Because I think applying the feminine search, the teacher in Ecclesiastes, is probably more applicable to men today than at his time. You see what I'm saying? So we'll apply that. One man among 10,000. You see how this relates to Abraham's negotiation with God. What if there's one man? What if there's one man left in the city? What if there's 50? This relates to the value, what Abraham was trying to find out about God. How much value does a righteous man have? Now, finally, if you relate this to what we're told in the New Testament, and again, I'm sorry, I'm doing this off the top of my head because I want to keep the flow going here, that had he not cut, talking about the end days, talking about the final, when Christ returns, if he had not cut those days short, basically no one would be able to withstand it. No one would be able to survive. Even you'd be down to just the elect, and even they might not be able to withstand it. That's how bad things are going to get. You see, this plays out all the way to the end. And it all relates back to God, or I'm sorry, with Abraham's negotiation with God over Sodom and Gomorrah, which is to find out how much value does a righteous man have. You see the pattern over and over in the Old Testament. God saves out a remnant. He'll wipe out the nation of Israel, but there's going to be a remnant. There's a remnant that didn't bow down to idols. There's a remnant that didn't burn their children alive in a demonic sacrifice to Baal because they thought it would give them more money. There's a remnant. And for the sake of that remnant, for the sake of one righteous man, I will not destroy the city. It's going to play out. It plays out around. It's playing out now on a grander scale. How much value does a righteous man have? Had he not cut those days short, it gets to the point there's not enough remnant left. It gets to the point there's not even going to, if he had not cut those days short, there wouldn't even be one left. And then there's no point in the exercise. God's not going to keep this going just to farm souls for hell. He'll keep it going for the sake of 10 righteous men, one righteous man, to just one more soul seeking him and understanding him. But it gets eventually to the point to where it gets so bad, there's not even going to be a remnant left. And then there's no point to the exercise. Jesus returns, ends the whole experiment, for lack of a better term. We're living in a nation of Sodom and Gomorrah. That's undeniable. We're basically living in a nation of Sodom and Gomorrah. And for your sake, my sake, for the sake of the remnant, he still hasn't destroyed the city. You see, this, the importance, and you see, I guess kind of the point is to understand how all of it fits together, the patterns, how the Old Testament, different parts of the Old Testament, and you can fit that in and understand it in the context of the New Testament. When it says, if he hadn't cut the days short, the necessity for him to cut those days short. In other words, the time originally allotted was a little longer, but it becomes no point. It becomes no point if basically there's not even going to be a remnant left. People are just going around to go to hell. Then he just cuts the time short. The world was allotted a little more time, but that has to be cut off now because he's not going to just let this thing keep going so virtually everybody can go to hell. He's not going to do that because that's not the point of why we're here. You look at the world and how just utterly wicked and degenerate it has become. And it does, and you think, Lord, come on, Lord. Remember Abraham's negotiation with God. When you look around and say, why doesn't Jesus return now? Wipe all these people off the face of the earth and just get this over with. And the answer is, for your sake, for my sake, for the sake of the elect, for the sake of 10 men, Lord, would you destroy the city? You see, Abraham wanted to understand God, and we can understand through what he did, we can gain an understanding of God. When you look at this world around us, why hasn't he wiped it off the map yet? Well, because there is still a remnant remaining. There's still a remnant remaining. Anyway, as usual, I'm going way long here. Let's go ahead and wrap up. I hope you got something out of the entirety of the show, of course. And obviously, the main focus is our Christian-specific segment. So that is what I really hope you got something out of. And I hope you got something out of the show. And I'm really glad you were able to join us this week. I hope you're able to catch all of our content Monday through Friday here on Radio Albion. We're doing the best we can. We continue to pray and hope and pray for the well-being and deliverance for Sven Longshanks, our friend. And I appreciate all of you stopping by. I hope to see you right here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.